Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, episode 118, a podcast part of the Pitcher List podcast network and about relievers. Switched up the intro, did not go well, but I am joined, as always, by Pitcher List bullpen expert Rick Graham. And Rick, I've got a question prepared today, finally, for once. Who did you vote for? Just kidding. Are you a soda guy? Do you like soda?
That's been something that I was, and then I wasn't, and now I've gotten back into it. Like, we have a soda stream now that I've been.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's kind of been a game changer, where it's like, if I'm in the mood, if I'm, you know, craving something, I can just make it, you know, whenever I want. So that's kind of gotten me back to it. And then, like, if we're going out, if we're going to, like, the movies, we'll get, like, you know, one of the soda or whatnot. But yeah, that's kind of been, it's been on and off for me.
What's your go-to?
I'm more of a, like, I'll do, like, a, you know, like a Coke Zero type thing, or if I'm feeling like, you know, I used to do, like, Diet Mountain Dew all the time, or you know, Baja Blast from Taco Bell is one of my favorite all-time drinks.
Heck yeah.
So yeah, any of those flavored Mountain Dews.
I get cravings for Mountain Dew, like, once a month or something. I'll just see a Mountain Dew on my phone or something. I'm like, wow, anything, any flavor of just the most artificial, sweetest drink you've ever drank, man, I could drink a whole thing right now.
I
love soda too. I love sweet drinks. I don't drink alcohol, so, you know, big on caffeinated drinks. I love Coca-Cola. Obviously not super great for you, but, you know, gotta have some things. That's sodas. We're here to talk about relief pitchers. As always, we're going to run through our news and notes from the past week. We'll discuss the closers rising and falling on Rick's ranks in our 3 of 3 down section. And then we'll close things out with our main topic as we discuss notable pitch mix changes across notable relievers in baseball to start 2025. But we'll start things off with our news. And the first bit is pretty significant, as Devin Williams of the Yankees has been removed from the closer role. It looks like for now, Luke Weaver is going to be the first man up. But what's your confidence that Devin Williams can return to this role? And is Luke Weaver somebody that needs to be rostered universally?
We'll start with the Weaver aspect of it. And I think he does. At least for now, unless you're in, like, a shallowish 12 teamer, it's just there's no reason to not roster Luke Weaver for the time being. He's gonna help you out with ratios, strikeouts. He's not really much of a risk factor, for now, at least. So, I'll start with I'll go with Luke Weaver. As far as Devin Williams goes, I've dove into this a little bit, not, like, incredibly deep, but I think he'll be fine. I wouldn't drop him anywhere. I know there are some, I've gotten some questions, like, you know, in teams where there's no bench, it's like, if he's not helping you, I get that, but, like, he's going to get back in the closer role. The Yankees are better with him there. They know it, everyone knows it. The stuff hasn't gone anywhere. It's still the same. The changeup's actually gotten better, shape wise, and the fastball too. The fastball's down a mile per hour, but I'm not worried about that, because it's going from 95 to 94 is not like going from, you know, 97 and a half to 96. It's still, the fastball shape looks better. I really do think it's like a pitch tipping thing. It, like, we go back to what, you know, there was rumors last October, you know, that he was tipping pitches. And then it's like, you know, Milwaukee obviously had the book on him. That first series kind of opened up, I feel like there's just ways that their teams know what's coming, because his changeups with percentage is getting cut in half. And it's like, all right, it's the best changeup in baseball. It's always had ridiculous whiff numbers, and now it's just been cut in half, and, like, the metrics are the same. It's the same pitch still. So obviously something's happening where hitters are just know what's coming. So, you know, I like to think that's an easy fix, but sometimes it takes guys a little longer to, like, if it's something like, I think the, the suggestion was that he was like moving his glove when he's throwing a changeup or something. It's like, just get that, build that into your, like your whole repertoire where you're just
moving it all the time.
Yeah. You're just kind of fiddling with something. I don't know. I'm just,
yeah, he just needs like a fidget spinner in his glove.
Yeah. Just like, yeah. Right. Just, like the PitchCom fidget spinner or something. Where
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think, I think he'll figure it out. I think he'll, again, I'm not concerned. It's not like the stuff's falling off the tape, like falling off a cliff, or his velo's a huge problem. I just think, getting a little bit more of that confidence back, pitching a low leverage will help. And hopefully whatever, you know, the Yankees are smarter than us. They see, you know, they know what's going on behind the scenes. So hopefully they figure him out. But his last two outings have been really good since he got removed. So promising, you know, start to his removal from the closer role.
Yeah. You mentioned we don't have any concerns with Luke Weaver. However, last week we discussed the 2 mile per hour, or is it 1 2 mile per hour decrease in his fastball velocity.
Yeah.
It's full two. I'm looking at it now, 95.7 to 93.7. The stuff on the pitch has not really declined in terms of IVB and height adjusted vertical approach angle. So yeah. I don't know. I don't know if you would say that Weaver's ceiling is not as high as it was last year, but I wouldn't say that there's any sort of real concern with Luke Weaver.
Not yet. I mean, we've talked about every time we bring up Luke Weaver, it's, you know, how the usage from last year, 99 innings and 76 games or whatever appearances. I mean, just crazy usage. And from someone who, you know, hasn't pitched a lot in the past 3 or 4 years. So,
yeah.
I do have concerns long-term for Luke Weaver, but for now it's working. I mean, we may not get to him in the pitch mix changes, but he has changed some things up a little bit. He's going more slider heavy than his cut instead of cutter heavy. So, you know, maybe that could be a result of the velo kind of being an issue. So, he's making it work right now. And, I'm not too worried. I mean, I would be rostering him everywhere. Until Devin Williams gets that roll back.
All right. That's Luke Weaver taking over for Devin Williams as the closer for the Yankees. Now we'll look at our injuries, starting with AJ Minter, who was placed on the 15-day IL with a lat strain, but it is a significant lat strain, and the lefty is now considering season-ending surgery. The Mets transferred Minter to the 60-day IL today on Thursday, so that puts the nail in the coffin for him returning anytime before the summer. And in a corresponding move, the team signed Brooks Raley to a major league contract with a 2026 club option. They immediately placed him on the 15-day IL, as Raley is still recovering from his May 2024 Tommy John surgery. So I wouldn't expect him to contribute to this bullpen during the regular season, but he's definitely like a backup plan if Minter isn't available for the postseason.
Yeah, it's like they're just kind of throwing darts and hoping one of Raley or Minter will be ready by September. And it really stinks for Minter, because he's been dealing with injuries the last couple of years, and he was looking really, really good. And that's a really bad lat strain. Yeah, I mean, that's usually, it's like months more than weeks, but that, like, 60 day already, that's concerning. So
season ending surgery is scary.
Yeah, I know, for a lat strain. So yeah, now that they have a huge hole as far as lefties go, because Danny Young needs Tommy John, and so they called up, what's his name, Genesis Cabrera, who's, I mean, come on. Whoa. that's not the answer we're looking for. So, and other than that, they have like Anthony Gose, or you know, it's not, there's nothing really there for them as far as lefties go. I'm sure they'll go out and get someone if Raley doesn't work out. I'm surprised they didn't sign Andrew Chafin, kind of. They got beat to it by someone else in their division. But
that's right.
I mean, the Mets have plenty of resources to go out and make a trade for a lefty, so I'm sure they'll be in the market at the deadline.
Mm-hmm. So with Minter out, it looks like Reed Garrett and Max Kranick are going to be the top options for holds, maybe Jose Buto as well. Reed Garrett, though, 0 ERA on the season, 9 holds. He's going to be their top option moving forward, replacing AJ Minter as the number one setup man in Queens. Very unfortunate injury, but we'll keep an eye on that one. Stay tuned to the podcast. We'll let you know what's going on with Minter throughout the season. Next, we'll move on to Forrest Whitley, who will be quick here. He was placed on the 15-day IL with a knee sprain. He had just returned from the IL. He just made his season debut. He tossed two innings. He's immediately back on the IL. That's been the problem with Whitley throughout his career, is his ability to stay on the field. Caleb Ort was activated from the 15-day IL by the Astros. In a corresponding move, the Astros bullpen really could use some help right now, especially with Brian Abreu on the paternity list. They've got just nobody backing up Josh Hader right now. But Brian King and Stephen Okert are really stepping up.
And Bennett Sous, they have like four really good lefties. And then it's just like, fine. Yeah. So there maybe there's a trade here with the Astros and the Mets, where the Astros send one of their lefties to the Mets. Have a few righties. I mean, Denyel Nunez, I know he's kind of struggled in Triple A, but that's a guy a lot of teams would take a chance on if the Mets were willing to trade him. So, the Astros, as far as Whitley, was probably a long shot to be a huge contributor. But yeah, they're really hurting for right-handed relievers there. So, Ort just got back. I'm hoping Ort can continue what he built on last year. He was really good once Houston claimed him. He's always throwing hard, so it's someone to keep an eye on.
Yep. All right, that's Forrest Whitley heading to the IL. Next, we have Justin Martinez, who was placed on the 15-day IL with shoulder inflammation. This is super concerning. Martinez was down 6 miles per hour on Wednesday, and that comes after the previous two outings in which he was down 3 miles per hour on his fastball. So there's clearly something going on. Martinez will be shut down. I don't know for how long. It's probably going to be at least a couple of weeks, and he will undergo an MRI, which should give us a better idea of the severity of the injury and the timeline for Martinez's return. Elsewhere in that Diamondbacks bullpen, AJ Puck was diagnosed with a flexor strain. He was initially diagnosed with elbow inflammation. That's sort of a positive move. However, he was shifted to the 60-day IL, which means that Puck will not be eligible to return until late June. And Kevin Ginkle was activated from the 15-day IL in a corresponding move. He had been out to start the season with shoulder inflammation, and I think many people are going to be thinking, hey, Kevin Ginkle is going to be the guy to step up for Martinez and Puck while they're out, because he was the Diamondbacks closer to open 2024. However, he just returned from the IL, so he's going to need some time to get into the flow of the season. So Shelby Miller recorded the team's first save without Justin Martinez and AJ Puck on Thursday. A lot going on here. What's your take, Rick?
I know this whole bullpen is like, what was it, a week ago? We had Puck and Martinez and Joe Mantiply, and it's like a whole new bullpen all of a sudden.
Yeah.
I was torn last night between Ginkle and Miller. I gave a slight edge to thinking Ginkle would be the guy to get saves just because of his track record. And he's someone we know Torey Lovullo trusts in that closer role. But yeah, it's his second game back today. He went back to back and pitched today and worked the eighth inning, allowed a home run to Juan Soto, which that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And his velo looks a little bit down, but again, he's just coming back, and it totally makes sense for Shelby Miller to be the closer for now. He's earned it after not allowing a run through 13 and two thirds now. Yeah, I mean, he's completely kind of transformed himself this season. I know he was up and down the last 2 years where he's shown flashes of like being a legit bullpen guy. But the Shelby Miller, what a kind of a savior. He and Jalen Beeks, who he's like we talked about, I think last week, it's like $3 million combined. And they're kind of saving this bullpen right now with Puck and Martinez on the IL.
Yeah, you wouldn't have expected those two veterans to be saving the Diamondbacks bullpen this year. But hey, that's just how baseball is. It's very unexpected. But yeah, I think I'd be trying Shelby Miller in most leagues right now because he's pitching so well. I think you are on the right track with the Ginkle stuff. I think they're going to go Miller until Ginkle's like ready to take over that role. Like once he's pitching well, he's having success, he's got confidence, then you can throw him in that role. I think they want Ginkle in the role, but they're not going to put somebody who's not ready for it. So I think we'll see Miller in there for like 3 weeks or something before Ginkle gets a chance in June.
Yeah, and Lovullo, especially with not having a clear cut guy, he's willing to mix and match. And, I don't think you shouldn't blow your FAB budget on Miller or Ginkle, but if you can roster one or both of them for the time being, it's probably worth it just to see how things shake out. Really deep. I don't think he's going to work his way into the closer role, but Juan Morillo looks pretty impressive so far for them. Another guy that just throws like 99 and has a 31.3% strikeout rate. So, yeah, the name to keep an eye on. But yeah, he's still got some names to work through.
Yeah, for sure. Elsewhere in the NL West, the Dodgers shifted Michael Kopech and Blake Treinen to the 60-day IL. I think that is somewhat expected for Kopech, who is dealing with some injuries right now, but he won't be eligible to return until later this month, late May. But I think it's huge news for Treinen, who I was sort of on the fence in terms of dropping in shallower leagues and standard leagues because I wasn't sure when he was going to come back. We talked, I think, last week about how the Dodgers are not going to push him to come back because they just want him ready for the postseason, and that's a ways away. So right now, it looks like we won't see Treinen until late June. I think he needs to be dropped everywhere. Maybe keep him in 15 team leagues if you've got room on your bench, but most NFBC leagues don't have IL spots, so it's sort of, I think at this point, worth it to drop Treinen universally.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they have enough options, whether it's Evan Phillips or Kirby Yates as like replacements, and then Kopech should be back. I think Kopech will be back before Treinen too. So there's, you know, they'll be fine as far as setup / secondary saves go. So yeah, Treinen's probably not a hold in almost any league.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, Evan Phillips has looked really good. We don't really have anything to talk about Evan Phillips, but he's looked really good so far since returning. Really excited for that. I guess I'm not excited if you're not a Dodgers fan like yourself, but as a reliever fan, I do like that Evan Phillips looks awesome again.
Yeah, and I think that's more reason to drop Treinen, is that when he returns, it's not like he's guaranteed saves right away. There's not only is Tanner Scott there, but Kirby Yates, Vesia, and Phillips are all there, all guys that are likely to have established themselves while Treinen is recovering. So I think it's going to be a while until we see Treinen getting saves, probably not until like September, maybe July or August, if they thrust him back into high leverage right when he returns. But I wouldn't expect them to push him too hard. I'd be dropping Treinen universally. Next, we have Alexis Diaz, who was optioned to the minors by the Reds. His fastball down to 93. He's got a 12 ERA. He's got 3 strikeouts to 5 walks and 2 hit by pitches. Really rough start for Alexis Diaz. He'll head back to the minors to figure things out. Luis May and Yosferi Zulueta were recalled from the minors in corresponding moves. May's pretty interesting. He throws really hard. I don't think he's going to be in high leverage, but he's certainly a prospect to watch in Cincinnati.
Yeah, he's like a raw, bruised dart, Gratterall. Like, throws really, really hard. Not a ton of strikeouts. More of a sinker guy. But yeah, like the strikeout to walk ratios in the minors isn't very impressive, but I mean, he throws like 104, so it's definitely a guy that's going to be interesting, or someone worth keeping your eye on. So same with Zulueta. I mean, he's been bounced around a little bit, but he's another interesting arm that they have that, I don't know, maybe things click this year for him.
Yep. All right. And lastly, in terms of transactions, Andrew Chafin, aforementioned, was released by the Tigers and then inked a deal with the Nationals. So he'll now join the Nationals bullpen, a bullpen that features just one other lefty in Jose Ferrer. So Chafin should actually be counted on pretty regularly by the Nationals as their number two lefty.
Yeah, I mean, behind Ferrer, who they're still sticking with, which I agree with, because I do believe Ferrer is going to be fine. He's good. But yeah, they, you know, just have really Chafin now. The whole bullpen's so wide open. I mean, anyone could kind of work their way into a setup role, or even the closer role, if I know Kyle Finnegan's had a bit of a rough week. But yeah, I mean, it's like, who, just looking at this bullpen, I was trying to piece it together, and like, who, if Finnegan does lose the role, who is like the best option? And it's so hard to figure out. Like, it's between like Jackson Rutledge and Cole Henry for me, I think, which is, I don't like it, neither one is really sticks out particularly, both, you know, starter turn reliever guys. But man, it's, yeah, I mean, hopefully Chafin can help them out and be a difference maker for them. So that, you know, I love Andrew Chafin, so that's going to be a fun one to watch.
Yeah, I don't know why talking about the Nationals bullpen reminded me of this, but I don't see any other chance for us to talk about this. The Rockies allowed a rookie to get a save last night, and there was nothing weird going on. Halverson pitched the eighth. Zach Agnos pitched the ninth for the card for the Rockies. It was really weird. He got the job done. 24-year-old rookie. He's got one strikeout in 6 1/3 innings this year. I don't know what's going on, but I don't know. What you have anything on this?
His stuff's better than that. He's kind of a fun. Yeah, he was. I mean, I was someone I was watching as like a potential prospect call up, but I didn't think. Yeah, I was surprised that they kind of just threw him right into the closer mix already. I don't know how long. I don't know if that's something that they're gonna stick with or not. I mean, this bullpen is so weird as usual. Jake Bird's been pitching unbelievably well. I feel like Bird deserves a chance. I mean, he's been there. He's probably their long. He's him or Kinley are their longest tenured reliever. Mm-hmm. But I feel like Bird deserves a chance to close out some games. But I mean, if Agnos is getting it, hopefully he starts getting more strikeouts. Because if you're just letting balls and playing Coors Field, it's not gonna last long. If you're hoping to be their closer.
Yep, that's Zach Agnos getting a save for the Rockies, the first save of his career, and just the fourth save for the Rockies as a club this season. Next, we'll discuss the closers rising and falling on Rick's ranks, but first we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relievers. We just wrapped up our news and notes section. We're now entering the 3 up, 3 down section where we discuss the closers rising and falling on Rick's weekly closer ranks. Make sure to go read those over on pitcherlist.com every single Tuesday. So let's start with the risers. Robert Suarez continues to lead baseball in saves. So he is always rising up the list.
Yeah, he's just every week. We're just going to talk about
every week. Yeah, he's going to be like he's going to be -3 at some point.
We'll still talk about him as rising. Yes.
Yeah. But our first riser is Jeff Hoffman, who's been killing it for the Blue Jays this year. 1.17 ERA, 41% strikeout rate, and 6 saves. He's been the clear-cut closer for the Blue Jays throughout the season, and he's had some reliable setup before him, which has allowed him to receive so many save opportunities. What else are you seeing in Jeff Hoffman that has you rising him up the ranks?
He's been dominant so far. He looks healthy. Velo looks fine. The strikeout to walk rate, 40.7 strikeout rate and a 20% swinging strike rate. So, that's like, I think there's 5 guys in that 40%+ strikeout rate, 20%+ swinging strike rate at this point. So, he's an elite company there with, only really Mason Miller above him. And Miller's kind of right now, Miller's in like a league of his own as far as how well he's been pitching. But Hoffman deserves to be up in that top tier, especially with how dicey things have been with, a lot of the other names in there like Class A and Devin Williams. So it's a little bit of a jumbled week now that we have, 10 plus innings and a month of season to look at. But I feel like it's time for Hoffman to belong in that top tier.
Yeah, and it's not like this year is coming out of nowhere. The last 2 years have been exceptional for Jeff Hoffman, and now he's finally got that secure role. All right, next, sticking in the AL East, we've got Aroldis Chapman, who it's difficult to support Aroldis Chapman, but hey, the numbers speak for themselves. 1.59 ERA, 38% strikeout rate for Aroldis Chapman, who's still sitting 101 on his heater. He's got just 4 saves as he's had to cede a few to Justin Slayton, but he blew up today. So I think Chapman doesn't really have too much competition. I think he's pretty locked into that ninth.
Yeah, I mean, Slayton today had a bit of a meltdown. Garrett Whitlock yesterday had a bit of a meltdown. So not that Chapman really was fighting with had to worry about those guys, because I think his usage is still going to be, matchup based. He's going to be in the eighth or ninth, but depending on the lineup. I think we're going to see more saves from him moving forward, and hopefully they start leaning on him a little bit more, because he should just be the set it and forget it ninth inning guy. Mm-hmm. But now I'm kind of concerned if Slayton's struggling and Are they going to trust, you know, Slayton to work the eighth inning against the middle of the order? Or are they just going to really want Chapman to go in there? So it kind of works both ways where Slayton's struggling. So, yeah, that's kind of how I, you know, look at the situation. It's, you know, Luis Guerrero is another guy in the Red Sox bullpen that's very interesting. If he can just continue to throw strikes, I don't know if he works his way into the closer mix, but he could potentially overtake Slayton with a good month of May, maybe.
All right. Well, it sounds like all my targets for Slayton in deeper leagues should probably be withdrawn at this point. I had Slayton in one league, and he did not have a good week this week. I don't think
it was, we'll be holding. Yeah. I'm probably going to give him another week or two, but yeah, it's concerning because, yeah, there's potential. We talked about him last week being like a 10 to 15 save guy with good ratios, but I don't know if the ratios are going to be there.
Yeah, not at this point. All right. Our last riser is Jose Alvarado, who continues to be the number one option for saves for the Phillies, and that's likely because nobody else can really figure their stuff out. Jordan Romano did get a save this past week on Sunday, but he's got a 12.19 ERA on the season and a 20% strikeout rate, while Orion Kerkring has had zero saves, but he's got a 5.56 ERA and a 20% strikeout rate. So the two righties, the guys you would expect to give Alvarado the most trouble, the most competition, are not giving him any competition. So that leaves Alvarado with the closer role by himself, and he's done an incredible job with it, mostly by way of that 3.2% walk rate, which is so low. He's got a 30% strikeout minus walk rate, one of the best in baseball.
Yeah, and even like Matt Strom hasn't been that great. He's been okay. He struggled a little bit this past week. So yeah, Alvarado's really by himself there, and what was kind of was considered as, you know, a strength is bullpen. Between Kerkering and obviously Romano struggling, it's more of a liability for them now. So yeah, Alvarado's just been the steadiest of the bunch, and he started the season as the closer for all intents and purposes, and he should continue to be the closer moving forward and doesn't have much competition. So yeah, I think he belongs in the top 10 now. He might not get every save. Again, it could be similar to like Chapman or Tanner Scott, where these guys work the eighth inning depending on the lineups, but he should get the bulk of the saves and help you out with strikeouts and ratios too.
All right. Those are our risers. And as those guys rise up the ranks, these other guys need to fall to accommodate them. Our first faller is Emmanuel Clase, who's really struggled this year to the point that Stephen Vogt had to make a comment and say, no, Clase is our closer. The fact that you have to say that about one of the best closers of his generation, no, he's our closer, don't worry about it, is concerning. He's got a 6.75 ERA on the year, struck out just 22% of the batters he faced. He got a save last night, Clase did, on Wednesday. However, he did allow a run while doing so. So it's been a rocky start to the year for Class A. It doesn't look like Vogt is lost any confidence in him. I wouldn't expect him to lose the closer role for a long time. He's really going to have to do really poorly, but I understand why Class A is no longer the number one closer in baseball.
Yeah, I think, again, like just as with Devin Williams, I think Class A will be fine. I know the velo has kind of come down a little bit, but I don't think that's not the biggest issue. It's been, you know, some command things. You know, the swinging strike rate's the highest it's ever been for him right now. It's not like the stuff's all of a sudden not missing bats. He's, you know, PLV and stuff plus, he's still the highest stuff plus reliever in baseball. So I feel like, you know, just some time, it's been a bit of an unlucky start. Over time, Class A will be fine. He's been pitching a little bit better the last couple outings. I don't think Cade Smith, you know, it would take a meltdown from Clase this weekend to kind of push Cade Smith into the role. So, this might be your window to buy low on Clase before that shuts. So if you want to maybe try this weekend, I would, you know, I think that's not a terrible idea, because as far as I can tell, it's just been bad luck, and you know, his stuff's still there. It's still really good, and we're not going to get to him on the pitch mix changes, but he's been throwing his slider more, which I don't necessarily love, because his cutter is, you know, his cutter's his bread and butter. That's his best pitch by far. And the slider is what kind of got kind of burned him in the postseason as well. So I don't know. The Guardians will figure it out. Class A will figure it out. And yeah, he should be fine.
All right. Our next faller, our fallers are Ryan Helsley and Raisel Iglesias. They have been falling consistently throughout the season. Helsley not really striking out the same number of guys he did in years past. And we're seeing that saves total come down to earth, come back to earth, reach the median we'd expect there for Ryan Helsley. He's got just 4 saves on the season. And if you recall, he led baseball with 49 last year. And then for the Braves with Raisel Iglesias, 5.73 ERA on the year. The stuff is diminished, 23% strikeout rate. Both guys that we've trusted for multiple years in a row seem to be diminished in 2025.
Yeah, I'm not fully panicking, but very close to fully panicking with these two guys. Very concerned. I think Helsley has a better chance of coming out of this funk. His stuff still seems fine, but like a 4.5% strikeout to walk rate, 4.89 Sierra. And yeah, this Cardinals team is just, he's not getting the save chances anymore. So it's like, he's just not helping right now. And will probably be I would say 70%, 70 to 80% chance he's traded at the deadline. I mean, Cardinals aren't looking like a playoff team at this moment. So, yeah, Helsley is just, it's again, you probably just stick with him if you roster him, but I wouldn't be looking to buy low here. Same with Iglesias. It's like, this is where I'm a little bit more worried about his stuff just kind of fizzling out, especially at his age. Stuff plus has him at 97 stuff plus, 4.96 PLV. So a little bit below average stuff wise, just a 27.1% CSW. That's low below average. So, or well below average. I don't know. The issue here too is though, it's like Deisbel Hernandez is their next in line, and that probably takes a lot to get Hernandez into that closer role over Iglesias. So, he's probably got a pretty long leash in Atlanta, but if he has a couple more bad outings, the one thing with him is he's not going to walk a ton of guys. So there's a solid floor there. Even if he is struggling, he could just work, run his way into outs by just throwing strikes. Iglesias, you probably hold on to until he loses the role, but I'm not too hopeful on him. But we'll see.
Yeah, it feels like Iglesias is going from a closer that had a lot of upside, where we're looking for him to possibly finish the season in the top 5 closers. Now it feels as though he's more of a Toby version of a closer, where we're not expecting a ton of strikeouts. We're not expecting incredible ratios. Yeah. Exactly. But he's going to be solid. The fastball is down over 1 mph. So that's also concerning for Raisel Iglesias. It's not just performance based. Mm-hmm. It's stuff based as well. So concerns for Iglesias. Ryan Helsley, as you mentioned, probably going to figure things out, but probably also going to get traded at the deadline. Our last faller is Luke Jackson. This one pretty self-explanatory. He continues to get save opportunities for the Rangers, but he's not doing much with them. 6.55 ERA on the year and just an 18% strikeout rate, despite 8 saves for Luke Jackson. how much longer can Jackson hold on to this? And who is the first man up? Is it Chris Martin or Robert Garcia?
It should be a combination of Garcia and Martin. I mean, there's no but the thing is Bruce Bochy really loves to have roles, and he's not a committee guy. So if he's going to go with one guy, it should probably be Martin, if that's something that Chris Martin wants to do. I get, cause like, I just don't understand how Martin wasn't the closer to start the year. Unless he just doesn't want to be the closer. So maybe it's Garcia. Garcia's gotten more use in the ninth inning, I believe, than Martin. So, and Garcia's pitched really well this year. I mean, I don't know if we'll talk about him, but he's upped his slider usage this year. He's starting to get a little bit more swing and miss. So, yeah, I mean, Jackson, it's funny about Jackson is like you see his PLV, it's at 5.19. That's, top 20 in baseball right now.
Wow.
And he's got an 8% strikeout to walk rate. I know his curveball is good. He's got his slider is really good. But the fastball is just so bad. And it's just, it's hard to get away. I mean, he would have to really just become like a 75 to 80%. So maybe he does the Tommy Canely just with his slider. Just throw.
That's called the Matt Whistler.
Yeah, the Matt Whistler back in. Yeah, I remember he was throwing 90% sliders, and that's mm-hmm. why he doesn't pitch anymore, because his arm probably fell off. But Jackson's just, I mean, as a closer, like, you can't. That's why I don't like Tommy Canely, is because throwing a pitch 90% of the time as a closer, unless mm-hmm. you're Mariano Rivera or, you know, one of these guys with one of those elite cutters or whatever, it's just not sustainable. So, I mean, Jackson as a setup man's probably fine, but not a closer.
Yep. All right. Well, to wrap up, the risers were Jeff Hoffman, Aroldis Chapman, and Jose Alvarado, while our fallers were Emmanuel Clase, Ryan Helsley, and Raisel Iglesias, and Luke Jackson. Next, we'll enter into our main topic to discuss significant pitch mix changes, and we'll just hop right into it, this as and discuss Josh Hader, who has seen his slider usage increase by 13%, which has led to his fastball usage being reduced. Nonetheless, Hader still having a really great season, 35% strikeout rate. The walks are down too, which doesn't really align with throwing a breaker more. Right. But it's working.
Yeah, and it's not even the best. Again, it's not even the best slider. But it's like these guys, and he's not that old either, but I'm going to call him an aging reliever because he's in his 30s, and mm-hmm. the velo is going to come down. You know, it's going to start trickling down once you get into your 30s. And while it's, you know, the sinker's still his best pitch, but just throwing that slider, getting that closer to like a 50-50 mix, that's kind of more important than the slider being that effective. So I noticed the slider he's been throwing it in the zone more this year. Yep. So that's where that walk rate, and maybe I'm sure we could figure this out. Yeah, he's throwing it more early in counts. I think he's going to, maybe not, but like, you know, first pitch, he's throwing the slider. Yeah, first pitch, he is throwing the slider. Okay, so, you know, first pitch strike on the slider in 23, he was at 48%, 24 was at 61%, and 25, it's at 70%. So, you know, getting ahead of batters with that slider, just throwing it over the plate, getting 0-1. Mm-hmm. That's kind of been his new approach, and it's working, and it makes sense for, you know, someone getting into their 30s in age.
Especially for somebody who's like most of the damage against him is always on the fastball. I mean, last year the ICR was lower on the fastball than it was on the slider, but he threw the slider 70% of the time, or the mm-hmm. fastball, excuse me. I think that's the pitch that gets crushed more often. The slider's done a really good job of inducing weak contact this year, while the sinker has a 44% ICR. Not great. So loud contact on the fastball, I guess that makes sense to get away from it as much as possible.
Yeah. And he is actually trying that change up a little bit more this year. It's mixed results with the change up so far, but it's at least the third offering he can kind of show to, you know, certain righties here and there. Mm-hmm. I mean this is kind of what these power lefties have. A lot of these power lefties, like, they come in, they throw a lot of fastballs, like Chapman. I mean, this is a guy who used to throw a ton of fastballs, and he's up his fastball uses this year, but he has mixed in his slider and splitter more over time. So I expect Hader to kind of follow the same route, where it's that slider usage keeps going up, and maybe the changeup usage as well.
All right. Next, we've got Jeff Hoffman, who's seen his splitter usage rise almost 16% as the usage on his slider has fallen. Hoffman's slider not performing well this year. The splitter doing pretty well, in general, but for a splitter, it doesn't really stand out. It's really the fastball that's carrying him this year. Do you think that it's possible he's just throwing the splitter more because it's a small sample and he's faced more lefties or something?
Could be.
Or do you think it's like a conscious decision? And I don't know what strategy you'd be employing going more splitters and less sliders.
Maybe just more, you know, usually that's, you're going to have less feel with the splitter and less, less zone rate with the splitter, and that's the case. The slider is a better zone usage pitch for him, but the splitter is, maybe just a better. Let me see. He has faced, it looks like he's faced a ton of lefties this year, so mm-hmm. it could be just a lefty thing. But Yeah, it's still interesting to see. I mean, they're both really good pitches, and I see why teams are very interested in him, you know, mm-hmm. being a starter, because he still has 3 to 4 quality pitches. But yeah, maybe this is more of a lefty thing than just a overall usage change. But the splitter, I mean, if we're looking at like PLV is not very fond of splitters to begin with. Yeah. So anything near 5 for a splitter is pretty good. So 17.5 swing and strike rate on the splitter, but that slider, yeah, the slider's been a workhorse for him. 27.3% swing and strike rate, 54.5 CSW. So you know, two really good offerings. And yeah, like you said, the fastball has been what's kind of pushed him over the top this year.
Yeah, I think the left-handed batter increase makes sense because Hoffman in the past was a setup man for a team with plenty of lefties. So right. I think in the past, they're probably sending him out there facing mostly righties, probably 70 to 80% righties, yep. because they had Alvarado, Tanner Banks, Matt Strom, all those guys helping out the Phillies bullpen. So now in Toronto, he's just being thrown out late in games. Doesn't matter who he's facing in the ninth inning or the 10th inning. He pitched a lot of extra innings this year, but I think that explains why he's seen an increased number of left-handed batters facing him and why we've seen that splitter rise almost 16%.
Yeah, that makes sense. That checks out.
All right. Next, we've got Aroldis Chapman, who we discussed earlier. He's throwing his four-seamer more, 27% more often, which has seen his slider usage fall. It's paying off, and I don't blame him, man. When you're throwing 101 miles per hour, I don't know why you would throw anything else.
Yeah, that's the thing. And like I kind of mentioned with Hader, it's Chapman's slider and splitter aren't great. They're average at best offerings, but paired with a 100 mile per hour fastball, it's, you know, just that little change of pace is all you need to keep hitters off guard. So it is interesting. I mean, yeah, that type of usage for his four seamer is really, you know, you don't see that, especially someone his age, but he still throws 99. And I don't know if we've talked about, but like, if you've noticed his IVB this year, Chapman's, it's up to 18. So he's gone up to 2 inches in IVB on his four seamer. So yeah, it's a pretty insane pitch, especially from the left side. So
yeah,
I understand why he's throwing his four seamer 57% of the time. It's his best pitch by far.
The off-speed usage is way down. I mean, it was 27% yeah. sliders and 12% splitters last year, which gets you to 39% off-speed pitches, which means he was throwing 61% fastballs. This year, 77% fastballs and just 18% off-speed pitches. So really trusting the fastball. I don't know what that's going to mean moving forward. I don't know if his command's going to get better. I don't know if he becomes more of a cherry bomb because that fastball is hittable. But with the improved shape, I would guess that it's just going to dominate people all year. And I assume he's going away from the breaking pitches because he can't control them as well.
Yeah, that's probably, and it's weird too, because the Red Sox whole philosophy is like, they were one of the most breaking ball friendly or heavy teams in baseball last year. So, but you got to pitch to your strengths, and Chapman's strengths is fastball right now. And yeah, maybe, I mean, this should, and his walk rate currently is under 10%. So I hope he relies on that splitter and slider, it should help that walk rate stay under 10%. So this right now seems like a pretty good sweet spot, but we'll see how it goes throughout the season, this mix for Chapman.
Totally. Yep. All right. Next, we'll discuss Jose Alvarado, but first we're going to take another break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen, discussing notable pitch mix changes amongst notable relief pitchers. We just got done discussing Aroldis Chapman. Now we're going to move on to Jose Alvarado, who's seen his cutter usage fall 10%, while he's added more usage to his four-seamer and curveball pitches that he threw 0 times last year. So that's super interesting that he's incorporating some more pitches into his mix and going away from that cutter, which was a pitch that he did a good job of getting strikes with in the past. No, he did not. It's never been a good strike pitch, but it is better as a swinging strike pitch. Yeah. And I think that's how he's using it this year, more so as a whiff pitch.
Right. Yeah. And I think the curveball and four seamer, he's almost exclusively used against right-handed hitters. So I think that's just something, I mean, he's faced a lot of righties, not a ton of lefties, But the curve and four seamer probably just something to combat righties more so than anything else. But the usage is up a little bit. I mean, he threw a couple last year, like literally three curveballs last year and two four seamers. So according to this and those four seamers, who knows if those are even actual four seamers. So
yeah, bad sinkers.
Yeah. But yeah, the cutter is always, I mean, the sinker is what he just kind of throws and that's his strike pitch. But the cutter, the strike rate with the cutter is, I mean, if you watch him game to game, that cutter is, it could be one, it could be two different pitches. I mean, it could be a pitch he's burying for strikes in the corners, or it could be a pitch that he's just not even close to the zone with. So it's nice. So if he does, if he's in an outing where that cutter is just not working, at least he can maybe throw a curveball, throw a little wrinkle in there, just to keep hitters a little bit off guard from just sitting on the sinker. But so far it's working. The curveball has had some success too. It's not the best shape, but be interested to see him throw it a little bit more. Maybe against lefties if he faces more lefties, he'll start using it a little bit more. But sinker's still his bread and butter, and that's, as long as he's throwing that thing 100 miles per hour, he should be fine.
Yeah, I'm trying to pull up what that sinker does against righties this year. He hasn't allowed a single hit on it versus lefties, but it's got a 55% ICR versus righties. So I see why he needs that curve and fastball, because if, like you said, if that cutter's not working, which for him is like flip a coin every time he throws it, whether or not it's going to be a good one, that forces him to turn to that sinker more, which versus righties, that pitch is diving into guys' bats. And that leads to loud contact here. Mm-hmm. It's an incredible pitch against lefties. If you've ever watched Alvarado pitch, it's just, I don't know how anybody can even stand in the box against that sinker when he throws it up and in. Yeah. It is scary. But against righties, I totally understand why you need something that can get him upstairs with the four seamer or keep him off the sinker with the curveball. So I think those are great additions for Alvarado and should make him a more trustworthy closer moving forward as he faces differentiating righties and lefties depending on the night. Next, we've got Robert Suarez, who we've discussed extensively this year, and for good reason. He's been incredible leading baseball with 12 saves, and I think a lot of that can be thanked with the slide, with the changeup going up 18% in usage as the four-seam fastball usage has dropped. Super notable because Suarez was a guy who threw 87% fastballs last year, four-seamers and sinkers, and just 12% changeups. He's more than doubled the usage this year, and the pitch is killing it, and also making his fastballs better.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of like the poster child for this whole segment. Mm-hmm. This is the guy we've been talking about, you know, forever. It's like, or not forever, but at least this offseason, it's like, well, I like Suarez, but he's throwing us fastball 80% of the time. And yeah, he changed that up this year, and the changeup has been, I don't know where the changeup went last year, because in 23 it was good too, and he threw it a lot, and then he just left last year.
I mean, the fastball was working.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, he only needed the fastball, but I don't know. It's just weird that the changeup was, he threw the changeup 34% of the time in 23, 12% last year, and now it's back up to 30. So, yeah, it's a pretty good pitch for him. And it's, he has never really been able to throw any sort of, you know, slider, curveball, cutter, anything to break glove side. But, if you're a closer, at least if just have two pitches, have a good, you know, fastball of some sort and some sort of off speed. And he has that in his four seam and changeup. So, yeah, this is why he keeps rising every week.
All right. Next, we've got David Bednar, who's seen his curve usage rise 16%, while his splitter usage has decreased by 9%. And looking at his past years, I think that sort of makes sense for somebody who's trying to get back to what he once had. If you look at 2024 for David Bednar, 20% curves, 24% splitters, and then this year, 37% curves, 15% splitters. But that's just a return to the usage that he had prior to 2024 when he threw his curveball more than his splitter. So we saw last year the lack of control on the curveball forced him to turn to that splitter more often, which affected his ability on the field. So now that he's got a better feel for that curve this year, turning to it more allows the splitter to just be a weapon versus lefties, allows the four seamer to play up a little bit more as well, as they don't know what to expect. So I think we're seeing the right changes we want to see from David Bednar.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to 21, and let's go back to 22 when he threw his curveball 29% of the time, and then 25% in 23, and then last year it was down to 20% with that splitter kind of overtaking it, and that's now we're back to 37%, so huge difference. But I mean, that's the Pirates. That's what they've been talking about, is trying to get him to feel comfortable with his curveball and being able to throw it for strikes too. That's the one thing. Similar to like we talk about with Josh Hader, it's like just getting that slider over like first pitch starting 0-1, especially showing them your off speed pitch, and then you can go to the fastball or the breaking ball again. You have options there. The first couple outings, Bednar was not able to throw his curveball for a strike, but he's been able to since he got back. It's kind of, we talked about how it's like kind of how Craig Kimbrell went through like ebbs and flows in his career. It was usually taped or, tied to that curveball, command. So that's kind of how I feel with Bednar. And right now he looks great. I mean, he's been one of the best relievers in baseball since he returned. Not sure if that sticks, but cautiously optimistic right now in Bednar moving forward. And again, this might be like your last little bit of a buy low window if you're trying to add a second, a secondary closer. I think Bednar could be a pretty cheap guy to add.
Yeah, I'm still kicking myself over dropping him in our home league. I didn't know how long it was going to be, and I got beat to the waiver wire when he returned, so that's not great. But that's David Bednar looking much better this year. Next, we'll discuss Porter Hodge, who is throwing his sweeper 15% more often while reducing his fastball usage. And to me, that's beautiful. That's exactly what we want to see from Porter Hodge. His fastball, not great. He threw it a lot last year, 61% of the time, but it's a pitch that's in the mid-90s. It's at 96, which is solid, but the IVB is 25th percentile. The height-adjusted vertical approach angle is middle of the pack. Doesn't have a lot of movement on that pitch horizontally either. First percentile induced horizontal break, so it's got a 39th percentile PLV. That's Hodge's fastball, but hey, that sweeper is dope. 78th percentile PLV. It's got an 18% swinging strike rate this year. It makes sense that he's throwing that more often. It's like Andrés Muñoz, but if Andrés Muñoz didn't have a good fastball.
Yeah, that's what, and that was my concern with Hodge, going into the season before they traded for Ryan Pressly. I wasn't sure if his fastball was good enough for him to like really be a dominant closer. It's kind of similar with Ryan Walker in a way, where like Walker's got the really good sweeper. The four seamer is, lacking. I think Hodge has a better, he's got a little bit more upside with his fastball than Walker does, but the sweeper is definitely his best pitch and one he should, this is the usage he should have. I know the results aren't there yet if you want to look at his ratios, but I feel like, better things are coming for him. I think he's the Cubs' best reliever right now. So, again, I don't see Pressly holding on to that role too much longer. So Hodge is probably a good, he's a good stash right now, depending on how big your league is. But, that sweeper usage, that should lead to more strikeouts for him for sure.
All right, Porter Hodge there. Next, we'll discuss Shelby Miller, who has seen his splitter usage rise 7% while completely ditching his slider and incorporating a sweeper instead. Shelby Miller obviously having a lot of success this year and now has seemingly taken over the closer role, at least temporarily, for the Diamondbacks. I don't know. You buying into these new changes? Do you think this is going to be brand new Shelby Miller in his mid-30s after back-to-back? It feels like he breaks out every single year.
Yeah, I remember it was the Tigers. I mean, he's had like the weirdest Dodgers. 3 years. Yeah, the Dodgers. But the Dodgers breakout was a fluke. And then, the Tigers signed him. And like he actually had a chance to kind of work his way into a closer role there. Didn't really work out in the second half. So it's been, been a bad, like, a little bit of a, crazy couple of years for, or crazy career for Shelby Miller, let's be honest. But now here we are, 34, and maybe he's the closer for the Diamondbacks moving forward. If Martinez, Justin Martinez is out for a long time, I mean, this could be Shelby Miller's role for the rest of the season. So I know the Diamondbacks, they said they're looking, or there was a report of them looking for help. I don't know what that means, especially in May 1st. David Robertson's available, but no one seems to know where he is or what's going on there. So, yeah, I mean, Miller's numbers really look great, and this pitch mix change, which that's the thing. He keeps wherever he goes, it's changing, and that's good to see that he's trying. He keeps trying to find something that works for him, and then maybe this is the thing that clicks and sticks for Shelby Miller. So, yeah, he's going to be a hot commodity this waiver period. I wanted to put a couple bucks on him. I did put a couple bucks, but I didn't put enough on him this past weekend in a couple deeper leagues. I really wish I did. I know. I lost out, but yeah.
I can't believe other people were bidding last week.
Yeah, I mean, just because we started to realize Justin Martinez wasn't right on Sunday.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, maybe what happens if Martinez goes on the IL too? And it's like Ginkel, we don't know. So I'm sure Miller and Ginkel will both be a lot of fab this weekend wherever he's still available. But like I said, I would just temper expectations a little bit just because Lavulu can, he might stick with a committee here. And Miller's worth rostering if you can get him for a fair price, I would say.
All right. Next, we'll discuss Tommy Kahnle, who is somehow throwing his changeup more, 10% more often, and now he's completely ditched his slider. He's looking like the flip-flop version of Robert Suarez from last year, where it's just no more fastballs. We're only throwing changeups. I don't blame him. His changeup is really good, but I don't think you can get away with throwing one off-speed pitch that often. I don't know. What do you think with Tommy Kahnle? It feels unsustainable. It feels like he's going to have a lot of swinging strikes, but that walk rate's going to rise as he doesn't have a pitch that he can consistently get strikes. It's like once hitters know that you're going to throw a changeup every time, they just stop swinging.
You think, but I mean, here we are. I'm trying to find his. Yeah, I mean, he throws it like middle, but he throws it like middle of the zone a lot too. It's not like, I mean, I'm the games I've watched of him, it's like he throws a couple good changes, but he throws a lot like just misses middle or like high. And like, it's just like, it's just like almost like facing like a knuckleballer in a way. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, it's coming. Like it's like Tim Wakefield, but you just still can't, you still have trouble against it. So, I don't know. I'm not too excited about his long-term closer up, potential, but it seems like he and Will Vest keep going back and forth, and now maybe Conley's back in that lead to be the closer. But again, with AJ Hinch, they're gonna, who knows? I mean, Bo Brisky probably gets off the IL and comes back and closes out games, or it's just not a situation I want to really bet on right now. But you can do worse than rostering Tommy Kahnle, and same with Will Vest. So
totally.
Yeah.
All right. Next, we'll discuss Robert Garcia, who's throwing his slider 15% often and reducing the usage on his fastball in return. So he's going pretty much one third fastballs, one third changeup, one third sliders. It's working out so far for Robert Garcia. 2.03 ERA, 0.98 WHIP. I don't know. The fastball seems worse this year. The PLV went from 70th percentile to 14th percentile. It's down in velocity. His HAVA, his height adjusted vertical approach angle, is worse. So I don't know what's going on there, but the off-speed pitches are still doing really well, and maybe the increased usage with the off-speed will be able to offset whatever regression he has in the fastball.
Yeah, I think you see why he's throwing that slider more, that that 5.67 PLV, this is best pitch metric based, and he's got a 17.2% swing strike rate with it. It's not a pitch that Washington had him throw a lot. He was mostly four seam changeup last year, but again, The four seam, yeah, the four seam was the one concern. I loved Robert Garcia last year, but the four seam has never had great shape. It's definitely needed to come down. 37% is a good start. It's almost like if you could throw something with like a little bit of like a, maybe more of a sinker or cutter or something. The four seamer is just not very. Yeah.
Yeah, they're trying something new with it. They're making him throw it high. He used to be a guy who threw it low in the zone all the time, and it's not really working. But I don't know. His extension is way down too, which is concerning.
Well, that's the thing. It really is kind of more of a. It's not really a sinker, but it is kind of more of a sinker. I mean, he throws it from a low slot, so it's even got some sort of. It's not going to have a. It's never going to have a good IVB from that slot. And it does have a little bit more horizontal break, but I don't know. I honestly throw just like changeup slider 40% of the time, four seam 20 maybe. Like that might be a good mix, but the changeup or the four seam at least is a pitch that you can throw in the zone. I mean, the slider zone rate 59%. That's kind of crazy for a slider. So, yeah, that pitch has come out of nowhere, and that's really been just steadying his season. Because, yeah, without that slider this year, his numbers would not look this good.
That's Robert Garcia. Next, we'll discuss Fernando Cruz, who has seen his splitter usage rise 14% as his four-seam usage has dropped. He's not throwing a cutter anymore, and he's instead throwing a sinker and a slider. So big pitch mix changes here for Fernando Cruz going from the Reds to the Yankees. Its splitter is exceptional. One of the best in baseball. 33% strikeout rate this year, or swinging strike rate. 31% swinging strike rate last year. He's throwing that pitch more often. That makes sense. But it is really interesting to see him completely axe the cutter and then go sinker slider instead.
Very Yankee I don't know if approach. It's just
totally. I think maybe they just altered the cutter a little bit and then said incorporate a sinker to help against right-handed pitchers, because Cruz being a four-seamer splitter guy is somebody who's going to be better against lefties. So maybe they were like, hey, sinker slider, you're going to be dominant against both righties and lefties.
Yeah, that's probably around the lines of what they were thinking there. And obviously the splitters is his bread and butter. So throwing that the most. I don't know, it's a splitter you don't want to throw. I mean, 56% for a splitter is pretty high, but this is one of the better ones in baseball. 33% swing strike rate. And now he's got three pitches that he can kind of work off of it with his four seam, sinker, and slider, you know, going each way to match with the splitter. So, yeah, love what the Yankees have done with him as far as this mix goes. And this is similar to the start he got off to last year too. He had like a really good start in April. I looked it up too. It's like this almost identical like ERA whip and everything. And then
the command fell apart.
And then yeah, the splitter, people just stopped swinging at the splitter. But I don't know. We'll see how things go the rest of the year for.
I mean,
for
him. Deeper pitch mix should help.
Yeah, that's why if you can again, we just talked about like how, you know, if he's able to throw those three other pitches for strikes in early on in counts, and just as long as he's getting ahead of hitters, he should be fine. So, yeah, with the addition of the sinker and slider and that cutter, the cutter was, yeah, it was fine. But I think the slider is just like harder or not as hard version of that cutter, basically. Mm-hmm. So it kind of gives him an other velocity range too, where it's not three hard pitches. It's, you know,
yeah,
too hard, too soft with the sinker, fastball, and then the slider splitter. So yeah, I like this new mix for Cruz.
All right. That's Fernando Cruz. Next we'll discuss Yennier Cano, who has seen his changeup usage rise 15% while his sinker usage has dropped 23%, as well as Cano has incorporated a cutter that he did not throw in the past. So we're seeing a guy who was, you know, mainly a sinker pitcher in the past couple of years, but now we're seeing him become a changeup first pitcher to pair with that sinker and cutter. It seems like he's becoming a more well-rounded pitcher, not somebody that's just going out there looking for a ground ball in every at-bat. He's trying to find some more swings and misses with that changeup, affect some righties more so with the slider, and also have some more looks against lefties with some pitches going up and in on them with the cutter and the four seamer. Do you like this new version of Cano better, or do you think it's, I don't know, too weird? two different.
Yeah, I think I from a fantasy aspect, I like it because, you know, he was 50, 51%, 55% sinker last 2 years. And now that changeup's up there to 39%. We're going to see more swing and miss from him. We're going to get more strikeouts. Let's see the slider. I mean, even the slider has gotten, the slider's gotten a little bit better, I guess. Mostly the same, but the changeup should really help add more strikeouts for him. So I'm, you know, this is someone I wanted to throw on just because that is a big difference going, like bringing that sinker all the way down to 28%.
Yeah.
But like all of his pitches grade out very well in PLV. This is one of our original PLV when he first came. Remember when he first came up in 2022? I remember Alex Fast like DMing me. He's like, is this real? Like, yeah, because he's an Orioles fan. So it's like,
yeah.
You know, that April, that first April he had was crazy, and PLV was like, you know, this is the best reliever in baseball. And he's been pretty steady and consistent. And you know, he only has a 22.9% strikeout rate so far, but I think that can improve with that change of usage going up. So yeah, I really like what I see from him this year, and he's always been a steady holds guy again for me this year. Should get another 30 holds.
All right, Etienne or Cano. Next, we'll discuss Hunter Gaddis, who has increased his slider usage by 15% and reduced his fastball usage. And I love this for Hunter Gaddis. Yeah. I think it makes complete sense. Not only was his fastball, overperforming a little bit last year, the shape isn't incredible, and the velocity wasn't off the charts, but he did have that rotation to bullpen velocity increase that we've now seen reverted this year as he's lost a mile per hour on his fastball. We talked about that last week. And so as a result, he's turning to that slider more, which is a pitch that gets way more swinging strikes than the fastball. And as a result, we're seeing a massively improved strikeout rate from Hunter Gaddis, 44% on the year after being at 24% last year. And I think that's thanks to throwing that slider more often and turning away from the heater.
Yeah, it's definitely his best pitch, his best offering. It hasn't been as good this year, maybe slider, you know, at least PLV wise, location wise. But that's his best. It's similar to like Porter Hodge, where four seamers middling, but the slider or sweeper in Hodge's case is the best offering. And now he's treating it as his best offering. I mean, 60% of the times, yeah, huge number for a slider. So yeah, I mean, I appreciate that consistency, and hopefully, you know, I expect these results to kind of, you know, to last throughout the year, because yeah, the strikeout rate last year, the swing and miss stuff, the swing strike rate, CSW, those were all kind of low for Gaddis, and that's why I was a little bit down on him going into the season, but he's, you know, looked great so far. So looking forward to hopefully this slider usage staying high for the rest of the year.
Okay. The last pitch mix change we'll discuss is Adrian Morahone, who is throwing his sinker 24% more often, throwing his slider 14% less often. He's incorporated a new cutter, and he's taken back the usage of his four-seamer. It's a huge change here for Adrian Morahone, and somewhat curious considering how good he was last year. I mean, there's like a little bit to be said about unsustainability with a 1.32 whip and a sub-3 ERA, but he's turned things around and he's doing incredibly this year. It seems to all be coming from weaker contact. He's been a guy who in the past was 34% ICR last year, 25% overall this year. And that's a lot thanks to the sinker, which is producing an 82nd percentile, 26% ICR. So the sinker, a pitch really good at getting weak contact. Morihone's turning to it more, but the increased usage of a pitch that he's throwing to get contact is leading to fewer strikeouts.
Yeah, I'm really confused by how his usage has changed. I mean, he was really good last year. I thought last year was his breakout, and now all of a sudden, yeah, he's kind of mixed things up this much of the sinker going up, and this feels like more almost like a starter's work or like a starter's repertoire.
That's what I was thinking too. Like, because we talked so much in the offseason about him transitioning, and I was like, that's the first thing I thought when I saw this was, oh, this looks like he was preparing to shift to the rotation and then never shifted as his arsenal back.
Yeah, now it's very sinker heavy, which is fine. Like, yeah, he's getting weak contact, but I like I know I kind of like last year's better because that slider was getting a lot of swings and misses for him.
Mm-hmm. It still is this year. He's just not throwing it.
It's just, yeah, 28%
swinging strike rate, 93rd percentile. Yeah.
And yeah, that's still, I mean, he's really at heart like a sinker slider guy with, I guess he mixes in the splitter and four seamer here and there, but it's really a sinker slider guy. Which I wonder if he just went with like those two pitches 50% of the time, how he would look. But I don't know. His stuff works. It's still, it's kind of fun that he is a five pitch mix reliever. We don't have a ton of those anymore. So, yeah, just very interesting one that I was surprised to see him just kind of change everything up this year. And the results have still been fine. So, yeah, it's working, I guess.
That's Adrian Morahone, and that will wrap up this episode of In the Pen, episode 118. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your social media and anything else you're working on?
Yeah, you can find me on social media at I Am Rick Graham on Twitter or Blue Sky. And as always, every week, you know, closing time on Tuesdays, hold up on Thursdays, and save plus holds on Friday. Yeah, that's pretty much all for me.
That's right. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. All my work is at crumplerbaseball.com. That site needs to be updated. It's been a long time, but it's still got links to everything. And you can catch me live Sunday through Thursday nights. Sunday through Wednesday, I'm doing First Pitch. Obviously, Thursday nights, doing In the Pen. And you can catch those recorded Monday through Friday, podcasting every week. But yeah, go check out the rest of the incredible work over at pitcherlist.com, and we'll talk to you all next week.